Hello, listeners, and welcome to episode number 9 of the Network of Moneymakers podcast. My name is Ryan Hafey, and my goal with this podcast is to create a network of people just like you who are willing to share your thoughts and ideas as to how to keep some extra money in the pockets of those who have been hit the hardest by this tough economy. Thanks for tuning back in. I do appreciate it. You're in store for a very good show. This could actually have the potential to be my favorite show to date. Reason being, it involves a couple things that, you know, a couple hobbies of mine that I either used to do or I'm still doing to either make or save myself some money. And they're just really fun things that you can get yourself into. You want to stay tuned, and I'll tell you all about that. First of all, I just kind of want to reiterate some of my contact information if you ever want to try to reach me about sending me any ideas into the show. My direct email address is letsmakeloot@gmail.com. Also, if you're just kind of stumbling upon this podcast and you want to find out where to get more information about the podcast, you can go to www.myspace.com/networkofmoneymakers, or you can go to networkofmoneymakers.podomatic.com, and there you can find things like show notes and just other general information on the podcast. Real quick, I did want to give an update on something I mentioned on last week's podcast. If you tuned in last week, I mentioned about 25 different ways from an article that you can just save money, just in general, just kind of different ways you can cut back that I think everyone can benefit from. One of them was eating out less. And I wanted to mention something regarding that. Now, I know it's hard for a lot of us to stop eating out either because maybe we don't know how to cook, or we just like to treat ourselves, you know, more often than some people might. If you're one of those kinds of people and you just have to go eat out from, you know, every now and then, my recommendation would be to go to restaurant. It's www.restaurant.com. Simple as that. And basically, when you go to this website, there will be an area where you can put in your zip code, type in your zip code, hit enter. And then that's going to pull up a bunch of different restaurants that are in your area that are affiliated with this website in some way, shape, or form. And basically what they have, these restaurants, they will offer gift certificates that you can buy at a discount price. For example, the ones that are most commonly on there is you can buy a $10 gift certificate for $3, or you can buy a $25 gift certificate for $10. You can buy these for other people or buy them for yourself. But it'd just be a way to, you know, keep some money in your pocket if you do like to go out to eat. And there's tons of different restaurants that are on there. Like I said, I'm from the Vegas area. Typed in my zip code, and I want to say at least 50 restaurants popped up. So it's a pretty decent selection. There are some conditions behind this. Some of them require a minimum purchase. Some of them automatically, you know, throw in an 18% gratuity. So you just want to beware of that, and that mentions all the terms and conditions on those when you check it out. But I just wanted to mention that. So anyway, what can you expect from today's show? Well, if you listen to last week's show, you'll notice at the end of the podcast, I mentioned that I was thinking about going over how to save money by brewing your own wine and beer at home instead of going out to the store and buying it all the time. Well, that is what I'm going to be doing on this show to an extent. What I decided to do, instead of mentioning both wine and beer, I'm going to be going over exactly what you will need to be able to brew your own wine at home, but not beer. I'll give you some resources as to how to get started with brewing beer if you'd like. The reason I did this is because I have much more experience brewing my own wine at home. One, brewing beer is a little bit more involved. And number two, the supplies that you need and the ingredients that you need to brew beer are much less accessible to the common person. So it'd be a lot harder to really get started on that. So I'm going to give you everything you need to know how to brew your own wine, and I will give you the resource to, if you'd like to start brewing your own beer as to how to do that. So stay tuned for that. Also, I'm going to be mentioning another do it at home hobby you can get into that could save you a lot of money as well. It's something I did back in college. I won't tell you what that is right now. You'll have to just you're just gonna have to suffer through this podcast and listen for that one. All right. Now, before we go on, I do feel obligated to mention that we're dealing with brewing alcohol in this episode. So I'm going on the assumption that if you're listening to this podcast right now, you're at least old enough to know the laws in your state regarding those kinds of things. So, for example, if you're not old enough to drink, I would turn off the podcast now. I don't want to be held responsible for little Timmy who goes home and says, "Hey, Ma, look what I learned on the Network of Moneymakers podcast today." Okay, don't send me any dirty emails or anything like that. I enjoy, like I said, I enjoy a good beer or a decent glass of wine every now and then, and it's a habit, not necessarily a habit, but it's just something I don't like to give up, and to be able to keep doing it, I found a way to do it to save a little bit of money. And that's the only thing I'm doing here is giving you the tools that you need to be able to save that extra cash. So, like I said, if you're not old enough to drink, just turn the podcast off now. Save yourself and myself, the time. But anyway, well, let's go ahead and get started. So, there's probably a lot of you out there. If you drink alcohol from time to time, you have maybe thought about brewing your own alcohol from at one point or another. And I think that a lot of people don't do it because they're a little, they think the process might be a little overwhelming. I'm here to tell you, first of all, that I felt the same way, and it's actually really, really easy to brew, especially your own wine at home, to the point where, granted, it doesn't come out, like the best tasting wine you'll ever taste, but it does come out and really well, and it gives you the opportunity also to experiment in your own way, something that you can't necessarily do if you're just going to the store every now and then and picking up a bottle of wine in the store. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to mention what I'm calling the uber cheap method of wine brewing, and then I'll also go over a couple alterations to that method that you can take into consideration. To where it may cost a couple extra bucks, but it'll usually it'll make the process a little bit easier, and maybe even make the ending product taste a little bit better. Okay, so let's get started. First of all, one thing you want to make sure, all the utensils that you end up using during the process, you need to make sure that they're sterile. I don't care how you go about sterilizing your utensils, but you need to do it. And that's not, and I'm not talking about putting something through the dishwasher or washing it with dish soap. You got to sterilize it. You can maybe use a bleach and water solution. A lot of bleach containers will give you directions as to how to sterilize things like that. One thing though, if you plan to do something with bleach, make sure you rinse out whatever it is very, very, very thoroughly at the end. But the reason you want to make sure everything is sterile is because I mean, if it's not sterile, you can totally just ruin the wine before you even start it. So just make sure you do that. And that's with anything that will come in contact with any part of the product, the finished product. Now, here's what you'll need, okay? You probably don't even need a pen and a paper, for this because, that's, the list is so small. You will need juice, okay? Now the juice cannot be citrus. It cannot be acidic like orange juice or pineapple juice or grapefruit juice. And I'll explain why later. And it's preferable that it doesn't have any preservatives because that can alter the taste of the wine. So try to get a 100% juice type of juice. And if you can, try to find it. in a gallon jug. Because if you can find it already prepackaged in a gallon jug, then you can just use that jug instead of having to get another one. Because I'm going to tell you how to brew it mostly by the gallon. So if you can't find juice that's in a full gallon, just you can use an old gallon jug that you might have, or even a like an old milk carton, gallon of milk. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that because of the bumpy surface on the milk. It can have a tendency to trap some of the flavors and things like that in there. So if you can avoid that if at all possible, that would be best. But anyway, so depending on the kind of juice, just kind of to keep a tally, that could be what, up to $5, something like that. All right. The next thing you'll need is a packet of active dry yeast. You can get that at the baking aisle at Walmart. And usually you get about three small packets of this active dry yeast for $1. Okay. The next thing you need is a balloon. And I'll explain why that is in a little bit as well. But a package of balloons in the, over at Walmart is probably just another $1. And then you also need some sugar. Just your standard, 100% pure cane sugar. And that might be what, a couple bucks. So tally that up. $5 for the juice, $1 for the yeast, $1 for the balloon, $2 for the sugar, $9 altogether for those items. Okay, all right. So let's get right into the process. Okay, once you've got all your utensils and everything in containers sterilized, all you need to do, and like I said, if you already have a juice container that's a full gallon, you can just use that gallon jug, for the whole process. But what you need to do is pour out about a third of the juice, a third of a gallon. You can just eyeball it. You don't need to be exact on this. Pour out about a third of it or so into a pot. All right. In that pot, you want to, well, first of all, you want to get that boiling on the stove. So as this juice heats up, in a measuring cup, you want to get ready anywhere between 3 and 4 cups of sugar. All right, and basically the sugar is what creates the alcohol, and I'll go into more depth as to how that works here in just a minute as well. Now the less sugar you put in there, obviously the more dry the end product will be, the more sugar, the more sweet your end product will be. But I wouldn't recommend putting any more than 4 cups of sugar per gallon that you're brewing of wine. Okay, once the juice in the pot comes to a boil, you want to put in the sugar into that boiling pot of juice. Make sure you keep the heat on high, and then you want to continually stir the juice and sugar mixture up until the sugar is all dissolved within that. And that's very important that everything is all dissolved, and you're heating it to make sure that the sugar gets all dissolved. Once the sugar is dissolved, you want to take the juice and sugar concoction off of the heat and let it sit for a little bit. Let it cool down for a little while. You don't necessarily need to cool it down a whole lot because you're going to be pouring it in with the other juice that's already in the container, and that's going to cool it down enough as it is. Once that concoction has cooled down at least a little bit, what you want to do is grab a filter, or not a filter, a funnel of some sort, and use that to pour the concoction in with the remaining unaltered juice that was already in the jug. Once you do that, put the cap on the top of the jug, give it a shake, make sure everything in there kind of mixes up well. Try to feel the bottle. Once you've done that, you want to make sure that it's not too hot. You want it to be a lukewarm type temperature. It can be warm. I want to say no more than 100 degrees. Okay. Once you've shaken that up, you want to open up the bottle again, and this time you want to empty in 1 packet of the active dry yeast. And once you've done that, close it up again, give it another good shake, and then once you've shaken it, take the cap off again. Now here's when the balloon comes in. And what you want to do with the balloon, first of all, because a lot of the latex balloons have that kind of powdery stuff in it. I guess it's to make it not stick to itself. I don't know. But you want to run that, you want to flush that out of the inside of the balloon. So you want to rinse out the inside of the balloon and then grab a pin or a thumbtack or something like that and poke about 6 to 8 holes in the balloon. And then what you want to do is place the balloon over top. Obviously, take the cap off of the jug. Place the balloon over top of the opening of that jug. If you need to, if it's kind of a wide mouth, you may want to put a rubber band also around the base of the balloon. And that's pretty much it. Then you want to store it in a cool, dry place like a closet, and just leave it there for a while. I'm going to kind of stop there and go back, work backwards a little bit, and kind of explain to you why we had to do some of the things that we did up until this point in the winemaking process. Okay, so basically, when you make wine, what causes the alcohol in wine is it's basically yeast breaking down the sugars that are in the juice, and then the byproduct, in other words, of the yeast consuming the sugar is alcohol. So it's like, just think of it this way. When you eat and drink, the byproduct of that is, pooing and peeing. Essentially, that's what ha is what's happening with the yeast. It's consuming the sugar, but just in this case, its byproduct is alcohol. Now, if you remember earlier, I mentioned that the juice that you choose to make your wine with, it cannot be citrus. It cannot be acidic. Reason being, yeast is actually a living thing. The active dry yeast, it's actually what you use when also when baking bread and things like that. But yeast cannot survive in an acidic environment. That's why you never see orange wine on the shelves in stores, okay? So that's why you want to make sure that the juice is not acidic. If you try to use an acidic juice, you're not going to get wine, plain and simple. Now, the reason we only use about a third of the juice when we boil the sugar is because, like I said, when you pour it back into the original container, it's going to be relatively cooled down at that point from the other juice that was in there. And that way, if the concoction is too hot when you put the yeast in, it's going to die. So you want to make sure that the yeast can be introduced into an environment where it can thrive and live. And that's usually it's usually like room temperature up to 100 or so degrees. So we've already gotten to the point where we've mixed the concoction together. We've put the yeast in there. We've shaken that up. We've got the balloon on top. The reason for the balloon was because when the fermentation process starts, which usually takes about 24 hours from when the balloon goes on top of that jar there. Sometimes it'll happen sooner. But basically, when fermentation starts, the fermentation process produces carbon dioxide gas as a result of the yeast consuming the sugar. So what the balloon does with the holes in it is it allows this carbon dioxide air to escape out of the wine without allowing outside air to come in and somehow spoil the wine. Okay, so that's the purpose of the balloon. Like I mentioned, it can sometimes take 24 hours for the wine to begin to ferment, and you'll know this when the balloon starts to inflate. At the very beginning of the fermentation process, you'll notice that there's lots and lots of bubbles, lots of activity. The balloon is going to be nice and firm at the top, filling up with carbon dioxide gas, and that's going to happen, be like that for a few days. After the first week or two, you'll notice that process to slow down a little bit, but it'll still be going strong for a while. And then ultimately, after about 3 to 4 weeks, the process can take anywhere from 3 to 5 weeks. But what you want to look for, and it's a good idea to check on it daily, just to glance in on it. But you want to make sure that the balloon stays inflated, and at the point where it starts to deflate, or maybe at least partially deflate and kind of hunker over to the side a little bit, that's when it's about time to start the final procedures of the brewing process. And basically, what you want to do when you're to that point, when the balloon is kind of deflated and the bubbles have stopped, surfacing, is you want to very carefully pick up the bottle and move it to a place where you can siphon the liquid out. Okay, and I'll get to that in a second. The reason you want to be very careful when you relocate the jug is when the yeast dies, and yeast ultimately will die because it's just like kind of like the example earlier. If you were swimming in a big pool of your own byproduct, after a while you wouldn't be able to survive in that pool. Well, yeast can't survive in a huge alcoholic environment, so it eventually dies. And when it does die, it sinks to the bottom of the container, and just settles there. And very slight movements have a tendency to, kind of stir up that yeast, and you want it to settle at the bottom. Reason being, you have to siphon out the wine. You cannot filter the yeast out. Believe me, I've tried this with, coffee filter, all sorts of different techniques. It does not work to filter it out. The only time I would recommend filtration is if you ever had anything like, large chunks of things. If you try to use real fruit in brewing your wine, you obviously might want to filter at that point. But otherwise, siphoning is the only way to go. What you want to do to siphon is you need a tube of some sort. And you can go to, well, actually, I would probably recommend just going to somewhere like Lowe's or Home Depot, going to the plumbing aisle, and get like a 5 foot section of tube, maybe about three quarters of an inch, a half inch to three quarters of an inch in thickness. And you can use that to siphon with. What you want to do to siphon is place the jug on a countertop, and then place a sterilized empty jug of some sort or another gallon container on a chair or on another surface that is below the countertop where the original jug is on. What you want to do then is stick one end of the tube partially into the wine jug. You don't want to go obviously all the way down to the bottom or you'll be sucking up some of that dead yeast. And once that's done, and I know this, this might sound a little iffy, especially if you plan to share your wine. But if you're looking for the uber cheap method, this is the best way to go. But you want to start sucking on the other end of the tube until the wine starts to come up. And you can do this quickly, and then before it reaches your mouth, you can stick that the other end of the tube into the empty gallon jug that's down again, elevated below the original wine jug. And what'll happen is gravity will continue to pull the wine from the original jug into the empty jug until it's all done. You want to monitor as the wine comes out of the original jug that you're keeping the tube at a good level to where it's not too high to where, it stops siphoning out liquid, and it's not too low to where it starts siphoning out some of the dead yeast. So basically, once the all the wine has flowed out into the other container, you're pretty much done, at least for that day. It's probably going to take you anywhere from 3 to 6 attempts at siphoning the wine, because what you'll notice is once you do the first siphoning, you'll let that sit in the new container overnight, and then you'll come back the next day and you'll notice that some more dead yeast has settled to the bottom. It's pretty inevitable, but it happens. So then what you can do at that point is just do the same exact thing over again. Make sure you sterilize the containers. This, like I said, this part can be a little time consuming and frustrating, but believe me, the end process is pretty interesting. And once you've gotten to the point where, all the yeast is siphoned out, then you've got yourself some wine and you can enjoy. Now, keep in mind, if you get to the point where you're just sick of siphoning and there's still a little bit of yeast left in the bottom of the container, don't worry about it. If it's still in there, it's not going to harm you to consume a tiny bit of yeast. I mean, there's unfiltered wheat beers out there all the time that, that's the same thing. It's unfiltered, so the yeast is still in the beer. So, don't let that concern you if that does happen. But that's pretty much, I know I went in pretty much a lot of detail, but if you really sum it down, it's a really simple process. So now let's do the math here. All of those items that I explained added up to $9, and $9 worth of supplies will make 1 gallon of wine. Now, 1 gallon of wine, if you do it all correctly and you utilize it as much as possible, it can make it can bottle up to 5 standard wine bottles, which is 750 milliliters, which can easily go for, $9 or more a bottle. Now, if you want to go up and brew a second gallon, that one batch of sugar that you bought, that's going to be able to at least, yield 7 cups of sugar that you can use to brew with. The yeast that you bought, you're not going to have to buy any more yeast because there's 3 packets that come along with it. The balloon, unless you bought one single balloon for like a penny, there's going to be more balloons left in that packet. And, the only other thing you're going to have to buy is more juice, another $5 investment. So you could brew up to 2 gallons of wine for $14, which would yield, from 8 to 10 standard wine bottles. So if you look at it in that respect, you got yourself a lot of money saving. And the cool thing about brewing wine is you can get really creative with it. I've done everything from just regular grape wine to, strawberry, kiwi, peach, wine. So you can really kind of mix things up. Now, if you can't find regular juice that comes in a gallon container, you can also use fruit concentrates if you already have a gallon jug. And that's actually beneficial in terms of being able to kind of mix and match flavors. So that's just something to keep in mind as well. And again, make sure it's not citrus, no preservatives, all that good stuff. Now, here's a couple tips that's going to make the process a little bit easier for you. And it's also going to make the end product maybe taste a little bit better. A recommendation of mine would be to go out to Walmart and get one of those water dispensing jugs, the big ones that have like the handle. They're usually about 2 gallons or so. I just recently bought one at Walmart, and it's one of those ones that has the spigot on the bottom, so you can just, pull the handle and it'll dispense it right out of that spigot. And the reason that makes it a little bit easier for you is because it's going to cut out the siphon portion of the end, the end procedure of the winemaking process. Because what's going to happen is that spigot sits just above the bottom of the container. So when that yeast dies and settles, it's going to settle below where that spigot is. That way, when you dispense the final wine product, it's not going to also dispense the dead yeast, and it's going to let that settle at the bottom. And I believe we picked ours up, our container up for $7, and that can obviously be used over and over again. Next would be to buy actual brewing yeast, and I get most of my supplies whenever I get different supplies or new supplies for winemaking. I get them from a website called homebrewit.com. That's homebrewit.com, and it's especially helpful on this website because when you go to the section that shows you all the different kind of wine yeasts, it'll give you a description as to which type of wine you should use this yeast to brew. So that's good. And also now, as opposed to the active dry yeast, which is 3 packets for $1, this one is usually 1 packet per dollar. However, each packet can brew up to 5 gallons of wine. So, kind of the same deal. And another thing you can do is, kind of like I mentioned earlier, experiment with different flavors and other ingredients. A suggestion of mine would be to use brown sugar. Not necessarily use all brown sugar, but maybe half, pure white cane sugar and half brown sugar. I find that this works especially well in hard cider. I think hard cider so far has been my favorite recipe, but it definitely works well, and it also gives it some nice color. So this is just some tips to keep in mind, and I hope that benefited you. And I hope you can go out and turn that into a new hobby. And don't go crazy. I'm not trying to. If you drink a lot out there, not trying to promote alcoholism or anything like that, but just like I've said before, sitting back and relaxing to a nice cold beer or or a nice glass of wine is not something that I like to give up. In my case, it's a stress reliever on hard days. Anyway, let's move on from there. Like I mentioned before, I'm not going to go over how to brew beer. Reason being, like I mentioned, it's a little more involved, and the supplies, not necessarily the supplies, but the ingredients you need are a little bit harder to find. I have brewed beer before, and as long as you have the ingredients, it's a similar process. But if you're looking to go out and start brewing your own beer, I think a good place to start would be to pick up the Mr. Beer Brewing Kit. You can go to MrBeer.com, and I'll post that link also. And they have a few different kits that you can start out with. There's the standard kit all the way up to like the premium kit. Each one has different ingredients. I think one of them includes bottles also and everything like that. But it pretty much gives you everything you need, including a sterilizing agent as well. This one, the kit is more for turning it into a hobby than anything, because what I found, I was going to try to start brewing my own beer instead of buying it at the store. But when you do all the calculations, when it comes to getting refills for future batches of beer, because they give you a container that'll brew 2 gallons, but when you look into how much it'll cost you to get new supplies for a new batch after shipping and everything, it actually costs the same as if you were to buy it at the store. So I would, unless you're planning to get more involved and plan to buy different ingredients from other places at cheaper prices, I would just, not necessarily use this as a money saving opportunity, but more just kind of a fun hobby. Anyway, moving on. Now, if you remember in the beginning, I mentioned that there was something else I was going to be talking about that could help you save money. And this is something that I don't do anymore because I've quit. But it's something I used to do back in college, and it saved me tons of money. And that's rolling your own cigarettes. Again, if you're not old enough to smoke, earmuffs, you turn off the podcast. But basically, when I was back in college, I smoked, and I didn't have a job in college. So basically, the money that I had while I was in college was money that I saved up, during vacations when I would be working back home. So rolling cigarettes actually helped me to save tons of money. I'm going to kind of be breaking down the cost savings for you as well. Now there's different ways to do this. If you want to be totally hardcore about it, you can go out and buy a little hand roller for $3, and then buy cigarette papers, for $1 or two for a full carton's worth of cigarette papers. That can be tough because hand rolling takes some practice. It's a tough technique to get down. And also with hand rollers, the papers that you use are not filtered, so it's going to be a lot worse for you also. My personal suggestion would be to buy a cigarette machine. There's a lot of really expensive cigarette machines out there, anywhere from, 10 to over 100, 100 to a couple $100. When I was doing it, I bought a cigarette machine that cost me $40. It worked well, it was quick, and it paid for itself very quickly. So it may be kind of an expensive initial cost, which I'll show you later isn't really that big of a deal in the first place, but it pays for itself very quickly. Now this cigarette machine, essentially all you did is you would buy these cigarette tubes, okay? Instead of buying just papers, you'd pay a little bit more for these cigarette tubes, which you can get usually a full carton's worth for $3. And what these are is they look like a regular cigarette but without the tobacco in them. So they've already got the filter on, they've already got the paper and everything. And the cigarette machine, what you would do is you would stick the tube into this little slot, put the tobacco into the machine, and then pull this handle, and it would just shove the tobacco into the tube for you. And I mean, it was very quick, very simple. You didn't have to spend a lot. I think I could probably do I mean, one cigarette just running through the machine, if I remember correctly, probably took no more than 8 seconds to do one cigarette. And then once you kind of get into a groove, you could do one, every few seconds. So, if you're just kind of sitting around lounging watching TV, it's something that you just, you don't even think about once you start doing it, and it goes by really quickly. So let me kind of break down the cost savings for you here. If you go out and buy the cigarette roller, like I said, I'd buy a middle of the line, middle of the road roller for about $40. You can go out and buy the rolling tobacco. If you can buy all sorts of different styles and brands of tobacco, whether it be light tobacco or menthol or everything like that. They've got all that kind of stuff in stock. And generally, you'll pay about $10 for a 6 ounce tin of this tobacco. And a 6 ounce tin, if you play your cards right, will roll a full carton of cigarettes. You'll go out and buy the tubes, which I said was, $3. And that's pretty much all you need right there, is those three items, at least to get started. So, okay, $40 for the roller, $10 for the cigarette or for the tobacco, $3 for the tubes. That's $53 right there. So, in other words, you're paying $53 for your first carton of cigarettes. All right. And if you want to roll a future, another carton of cigarettes after that, all you're going to need after that is the tobacco and another thing of tubes, which is another $13. Okay. Look at it this way. For two cartons, then you've paid 53 plus 13, so $66 you've paid for two cartons of cigarettes by rolling them on your own. All right, what does a carton of cigarettes cost these days? What, like $35? And if I'm not mistaken, they're starting to raise prices on that, so that could go way up. And that also depends on where you're located as well. We'll just use $35 a carton for right now, and I could be wrong because I haven't bought a carton of cigarettes for a long time. That being said, we'll just use $35 as a figure for right now. All right, so you're spending $66 for two cartons, rolling them on your own, as opposed to buying two cartons in the store pre-rolled for you for $70. So within your second carton of cigarettes, you've already started saving money as opposed to going to the store and buying them pre-made for you. And when I was in college, I used to roll packs of cigarettes for people and sell them for like $2 a piece. So if you look at it that way, 10 cartons or 10 packs in a carton, if you sell, a pack for $2 a piece, you made a $7 profit on a carton. It's $20 minus $13. So you can even make some money in that respect as well. Now, you can buy supplies for cigarette rolling online. My suggestion would be find your local smoke shop and go there and do it, so you can avoid the shipping costs that you might come across online. Every town has a smoke shop, and just search up on the internet and look for it, or look in your phone book and you'll find it. So that's another tip. If you are a smoker, and I've been a smoker and I know how hard it is to break the habit. So if you in any situation to be able to break the habit as of right now and you need to save money, I would go this route. But anyway, that kind of sums it up for this show. I hope I didn't make any impose any bad habits on any of you out there. I hope I didn't encourage any of you non-drinkers to start out, go out and start drinking or anything like that. But with this podcast, I want to explore all possibilities when it comes to saving money. But anyway, so let's kind of preview next week's show. I kind of like what I'm doing here in terms of finding different ways to make things at home instead of having to go at the store. So I think I'm going to keep with that routine. So for next week's podcast, I plan to research different ways to make things at home instead of having to spend a bunch of money at the department store to buy them. And I haven't really started any research on it yet, but I'm thinking about things like, ways, and these are just possibilities for right now. I'm not necessarily going to mention these in particular in the next show, but making your own shampoo, making your own baby wipes. I've actually seen a video as to how to do that. I'm going to look that one up again and share that one with you on next week's show. household cleaner maybe. And I'm also welcoming any of your ideas. Again, the email address is letsmakeloot@gmail.com. If you can think of anything that you use commonly around the house that you hate having to go to the store and fork up money for all the time, send me an email and let me know what the item is, and I'll research it and see if there's a way you can make it at home for cheaper. Or if you know of your own items that you can make at home, and you've been doing that for a while and it's worked out for you, send in the ideas to me and I'll highlight it on the show. And also with the wine recipe that well, not necessarily the recipe, but the wine technique that I mentioned today, I'll put it out in writing up on the MySpace page for you. Again, that's www.myspace.com/networkofmoneymakers. I think I'll put it that in the blog. That might not be up right away because I had a recipe from before, but I need to kind of pull it out and tweak it a little bit because my techniques have changed a little bit over time. But if you're looking for a text version of that, that will be up on the site eventually for you, hopefully within the next couple of days. But anyway, again, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or ideas, email them to me at letsmakeloot@gmail.com. Thanks so much for coming back and checking out the show this week, and I hope to see you next week. We'll be back with more good money saving and money making techniques.
Ryan is not a money-making expert and should not be held accountable for any resulting outcomes based on his suggestions during the Network of Moneymakers podcast. Please use your own discretion when choosing to pursue any of the suggestions made on the show.